Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey now, Sharks fans. It's Dudes on Hockey, episode 19. Just got back from the Pittsburgh game. I don't know about you, dude, but I am pumped. That was a nice win.
I thought it was pretty boring, actually.
Please.
Dude, that was awesome. And I have to admit, and I wrote about this on the blog, that I was very concerned that the Sharks were going to be caught looking ahead to the game that I think has been circled on McClellan's schedules from the second it came out to Detroit on Thursday. But they weren't looking ahead. They were ready. And they shut them down, and they dominated the game. Great win, dude.
And I think they set a club record for fewest shots allowed. They only allowed 11 shots against one of the highest-powered lines in hockey, Yevgeny Malkin, with Sidney Crosby playing together. And they held them to 11 shots. I mean, it was pretty exciting stuff there late. I mean, give the Penguins credit. The Sharks scored the second goal, put them up by two with about 5 minutes left. Very next shift, Crosby and Malkin come back, do some good work behind the net with the cycle, and leads to a goal. So it makes the next last 5 minutes of the game a real nail-biter. But the fact is, they did not get a shot after that scoring shot to make it 2-1. Sharks prevail 2-1. It was a hell of an effort all around, actually.
Dominant. No shots by Sidney Crosby. Only two by Malkin. Sharks dominated in the faceoff circles 30-16.
I think Joe, I heard on the post game coming home that Joe was 11-1 in the faceoff dot or something like that. I mean, he was absolutely dominant. I mean,
totally dominant.
You never hear numbers like that.
Sharks were buzzing around. They were making good plays. It got a little dicey at the end.
It got real dicey.
But again, the difference between this year and last year is last year, we lose this game. They would have coughed it up. We saw it happen so many times. And usually it was Jerome Iginla skating around Semenov to score the goal. But this year, it's a different feel.
Right, and it was a continuation of the Tampa Bay game, but actually it was a double exciting night for you because you got to meet some of your soccer buddies.
That's right. We were sitting, we have the Magic Row this year.
We do, man. We're around like all the celebrities or something. I don't know how we got this section that we're in, but it seems like the players' wives are there.
That's
There's always
right.
something interesting happening around us.
This tonight we had some of the San Jose Earthquakes sitting a couple rows in front of us. I'm a big Major League Soccer fan, San Jose Earthquakes season ticket holder, and some of the guys were sitting there, including my favorite player, Ronnie O'Brien. Those of you who are MLS junkies like myself know Ronnie O'Brien's probably one of the best midfielders in Major League Soccer, and talked to those guys, and they were really awesome. They were having a few beers, enjoying the game, and it was great to see them out there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. They seem to be real nice. They're all hanging out with a bunch of them, and I think you were the only person that came up to him all night.
Yeah, the guy when I left, the guy sitting next to him goes, "Who are these guys?" It's like no one.
Yeah, forget it. Who cares?
Yeah, it's not worth explaining if you don't know.
But I think the great thing about the Pittsburgh game, it was really a continuation of what we saw in Tampa Bay on Sunday, where they did not give up anything to Tampa Bay, who also has a very high-powered line with Martin St-Louis and Vincent LeCavalier. Those guys didn't get on the board at all. Sharks shut them out 3-0 with Brian Boucher in net. And that seemed to be a huge reaction to what we saw against Florida and what we saw in a couple of crazy high-flying games against Philly. Jeez, those games, was 7-6 in overtime was one, and then the other one was 5-4.
Crazy road trip.
Right.
Great road trip. I didn't quite get the results correct, except for Tampa, but 2-1 road trip, you got to take that. Got now to win against Philly, and again, a desperate team. And they beat them.
I mean,
Philly won.
Philly
tonight.
Came back
7-0. Did you see that?
Yeah,
score?
Against Atlanta. I mean, no. Atlanta is just completely disintegrating. They're going to get rid of they're going to get rid of Kovalchuk. Atlanta's done. They got nobody in the seats. It's ridiculous, but the Philly game was really it was some of the most exciting hockey I've seen in a long time because they were just like trading goals. I mean, it was just like end-to-end action. Everybody was shooting crazy. Sharks had 40 shots, some 45 shots. They had 45 or 50 shots in the second game. They had 45 or 50 shots against Florida. But that kind of style is not a respectable way to play hockey, at least in the minds of a lot of people.
You get a W. JR skating at the end on the on the shootout, one hand on his stick, one hand on his middle finger, and he just shoves it right in the goal. I mean, you knew it was going to happen. When you see Pavelski and JR coming out there, that's the attitude this year.
Pavelski's automatic. It's so crazy that Pavelski does exactly the same shootout move every shootout. He does a little curve to the left, and he's coming back across the goal, and he just rips the wrist shot, usually near side post, and the goalie has to come with him across the goal mouth as he moves from his left to his right, and Pavelski's just got that shot wired. It's nuts. I mean, you could watch a video on this guy and still get beat every time, and that seems to be what's happening. I mean, he only has one move.
He's making the giant leap from being a role player to being a
legitimate star.
Legitimate star, yeah, on this team. And this style is really playing into his strengths. He was awesome tonight. He's the number one star tonight.
Yeah, he was. And because of the shorthanded goal that happened, Milan Mihalik did a lot of the work. He broke in, got past the defense, made a good move. Danny Sabourin made a decent save, but he left the puck sitting there right in the crease, and Pavelski came in, took out the trash.
Yes. Sabourin played good tonight, but he was pretty damn lucky on some of those.
I think there were three posts in the game. Is that right?
And his desperation dive.
Right. On Dan Boyle. Mm-hmm.
Good Lord.
Yeah, that game could have easily been 3 or 4 to nothing halfway through. It could have been something like that. Pittsburgh could have been completely put away, and if not for some iron and some really spectacular saves by Danny Sabourin, it didn't need to be as close as it was, but that's why Pittsburgh managed to hold themselves in games. They had a legitimate shot of tying the game late in the third, and they only had 11 shots all night, so you can't knock it. Because those guys can make it. Those guys find a way to stay competitive in the game, and I think against any other team, the Sharks would have just destroyed the way they destroyed Tampa.
Yeah, that's what good teams do. And you catch a team sort of when they're down. They're missing some of their best players. They're still playing good hockey this year,
mm-hmm.
But great win, big win for the team.
I do want to talk about something that we saw in the Florida game, and we saw a lot of it tonight, and that's a low cycle. Florida likes to cycle low a lot, and that seemed to really keep the puck in the Sharks' end quite a bit, and we saw the Malkin line do it tonight, and I wonder if that's going to be a tactic that we're going to see used against the Sharks going forward, because clearly Florida had some success with it. They beat the Sharks 4-3, mostly on some pretty sloppy play by the Sharks, but the breakout for the Sharks has looked really good, as opposed to previous years where it seems like everybody's just sort of lugging it and making bad passes, but Keeping the puck low and cycling it low behind the net seems to be a recipe for some danger against the Sharks. I hope the Sharks find a way to do something about it.
It's almost like taking last year's Sharks team that likes to cycle behind the net and then putting them against this year's Sharks team.
Mm-hmm.
Their strength last year might be their weakness this year as far as defending it. And I did notice that, and it did lead to some chances tonight. And maybe it's exposing the immobility of players like Lukowicz and
Rob Blake. Yeah.
But 8-2, baby.
Mm-hmm.
8-2.
Yeah. You certainly can't complain about those results.
No.
With Rob Blake, it's a little bit frustrating to see someone even up with Rob Blake or even a half step behind, throw the puck into the corner, and Blake just gives him the puck, lets him lead into the corner, and Blake goes in after him because Blake knows that he can't beat him to it, or doesn't want to joust for it right in the corner. But you see guys like Vlasic and Aerhoff consistently make that play and make it well. And I got to give props to Marc-Edouard Vlasic, because this guy is quietly becoming a great defenseman. You see him one-on-one with Crosby coming down the right side. Crosby pulls up short, turns his back to the goal, tries to make a backhand move. Vlasic is on his ass the entire time. It is a difficult thing to do that. And Vlasic does it with ease. He makes it look easy.
It was interesting to see that they changed that matchup, because when they started the game, we noticed that it was Murray and Aerhoff that were drawing
mm-hmm.
the Crosby line. And that seemed like that was what McClellan wanted, maybe the physicality of Murray trying to wear them down. But then they definitely went away from that near the end.
Well, Murray made that horrible giveaway yeah. to Malkin in the first period, and Nabby just completely
coughed it up.
Yeah, he completely just telegraphed that pass across the goal to Aerhoff. Malkin read it. He read it for 2 or 3 seconds, and then Murray still tried to make that pass. Malkin just picked it off about 6 feet out of the crease, and Nabi bailed him out. And I'm not sure we saw Murray against Malkin after that.
Probably not. Yeah. Probably shouldn't.
Murray did look a little slow against that line, I got to admit. You know, I mean, I like his physical presence, and I like his general positioning, but against a speedy guy like Crosby and a strong and speedy guy like Malkin, Murray looked a little out of his element, I have to admit.
He's our sixth defenseman. He shouldn't be out there against those guys.
True, true. All righty. Okay, so let's move on to something that's a little bit related to my other job that pays nothing. And if you heard me on the radio this past Sunday, we did an interview with Dan Rusinowski, which was pretty interesting. But we also did an interview with a guy that we've mentioned on the show previously, a guy named Ryan Garner, who posts on HockeyBuzz.com about the Sharks. I believe he's a columnist for the Vallejo Times-Herald, just a general sports columnist, not necessarily always about the Sharks. But over the years, he's made some predictions or some judgments on the Sharks that, I guess, a mild way of putting it would be Doug and I disagree vehemently with. I know he said that the Sharks will never win a Stanley Cup with Patrick Marleau as the captain, which is something I obviously disagree with, or definitely disagree with. And I don't know. The interview. What do you think about the interview? It was hard. You know, I was sort of trying to, I don't know what I was trying to do, to be perfectly honest, in that interview, but maybe you can tell me what you thought about it.
Well, I found the interview about as irritating as I do his blogs because I felt like he was given the opportunity to sort of defend his position, and he didn't either doesn't care or he's not able to defend it. My issue with Garner, one, is that I don't think he's a Sharks fan. I don't think he cares about the Sharks. And as a blogger, not a journalist, but a blogger,
right,
writing about the Sharks on a fan hockey site, someone who just, I don't think he cares that much about the team. It doesn't make it an entertaining read to me to see somebody who's looking for every little nuance to pick apart the team. Like, we've got them coming home from a 2-1 road trip, and he's writing a blog about people who are accountable for every goal they give up.
Right.
Which, in his statistics and logic, were completely ludicrous, where it's like he's like God making a judgment on one person who's responsible for every goal.
Right, and the Briere goal, which we made a huge stink about, I made a stink about on the blog, during this show, during the radio show, which I clearly thought was Kashbar's fault because he let Briere skate right past him. As an example, Garner said that it was Aerhoff's fault on that goal, which I don't even see how Aerhoff factored into that play even remotely, but I guess that post, it doesn't make any sense. But yeah, I mean, how can you... It's difficult. It's difficult to... I mean, I don't mind that he has controversial opinions, and actually, unlike you, I don't even mind that he is or isn't a Sharks fan. It doesn't really bother me at all. But if you're gonna take a stand on something and say something controversial, and saying Patrick Marleau will never win a Stanley Cup with the Sharks team that's very, very good, that's a pretty controversial statement, especially when your readership are Sharks fans.
What did he say about Dan Boyle, that he plays defense like a cardboard helmet?
He has less defense than a cardboard helmet. Or a cardboard defense has more defensive ability.
You called him on that, and his defense was that, well, I write for entertainment.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think we do this podcast for entertainment, but if we say something, we actually believe that it's true. Whereas I'm not sure, you know, when he writes something, if he actually believes what he's saying, or he's so out of touch with what's going on with the Sharks that he just is looking to push people's buttons or looking for some sort of creative way to spin things that just don't really make a lot of sense. The biggest thing that irritated me this summer, Mike, about Garner was that he ripped the Dan Boyle trade. And also said that, you know, the way this team's constructed, he was, you know, Chicken Little about the whole thing. I call him Chicken Little. That's my favorite name for him because the sky is always falling with him. And, you know, we're ecstatic about an 8-2 start. You know, and he might write something negative tomorrow about, you know, what they did wrong tonight. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the Boyle trade, giving up too much, mortgaging the team's future, was what he said. Giving up Matt Carl, who's having a great year.
He's got one point. He's on my fantasy team.
No,
believe me, I know.
No power play points at all.
Even though he's on the top line.
He's got nothing. I mean, he is proving to be the player he was last year, which is someone who is regularly scratched. Maybe not forever, but mm-hmm. Right now, that's his deal. And then we gave up Ty Wishart, who's not even good enough to play on maybe the worst defensive
team in the
six
NHL. Yeah.
In the NHL. He's not good enough to play there right now. So what does that say? And then in return, we're getting a all-star defenseman, a 60-point player, someone who can lead the break, someone who is a captain in the dressing room, a strong personality, someone who's won a cup, and someone who's locked up for 6 years. It's not like we got a guy who's going to walk away. He's part of the core now. How is that a bad move, Mike?
I don't see it. And that was the kind of thing I try. I mean, I don't mind that if you have a controversial opinion, but when I said that about Boyle, he didn't take the bait. I don't know if I had a lot of bait out there, but I mean, if you want to say that Boyle's washed up and that he's a huge liability defensively, then let's talk about that. You know, let's break down the numbers, you know, and my first response to that would be Boyle's on the first unit penalty kill. How bad can he be defensively?
You said that, Mike, and he didn't care enough to really put up much of a fight. He went to the I just write for entertainment. He didn't have a defense for the defensive comments. But one thing that we talked about afterwards was, you know, you compare the Boyle trade to what the Ducks did getting Chris Pronger. What did they give up for Chris Pronger?
They gave up Joffrey Leupold, Ladislav Smid, two first rounders in a second round.
And what happened to the Ducks?
They won the cup.
Thank you.
And they gave up more than we gave up for Boyle. And we got Lukowich in return, I might add.
And if I was the Ducks, I'd make that trade every single time and twice on Sunday.
Exactly.
For a cup, you do it. You do it. They didn't give up anything. I mean, they gave up a lot, but it ended up being nothing. And I think that for the Sharks, when we look at this in 6 years, hopefully we'll be sitting here, you know, with a cup. But we'll also go, this wasn't that impactful.
Right. And Boyle's already underpriced. I mean, you said you saw a Brian Campbell in a game last night or the night before. What'd you think
about
Brian Campbell?
Last night, Brian Campbell on the Blackhawks, he looks lost to me. Watching him, I mean, I think I was a big Brian Campbell fan when he was here. I love what he does on the offensive end. But he reaches with his stick. He doesn't play the body. And Boyle's a way better defender. And Campbell's a liability in his own zone. And he's shy to shoot the puck. And Boyle is not shy to shoot the
Certainly
puck.
Certainly not.
Ever. And at the end, I felt Campbell was dancing around and doing figure eights, trying to get into the zone. And really wasn't able to initiate Chicago's offense. Chicago's kind of a mess right now, Mike.
They kind of are, and I guess our next prediction maybe that Dale Tallon could be on his way out. They installed Joel Quenneville as coach, and if this team continues to struggle, we could see the GM getting replaced as well. They brought in Scotty Bowman. Scotty Bowman could be he could be eyeing Dale Tallon's job just like Joel Quenneville was eyeing Denis Savard's job.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Campbell's numbers aren't bad. 6 points, he's a plus five.
That's really good, actually.
But he's got one power play assist. That's it. Yeah, I'm not knocking Campbell. He's a
good
player. No,
he's an absolutely brilliant skater.
He's
and
a good player, but he's not better than Dan Boyle.
I don't see it either. It's interesting. Actually, talking about GMs, we're going to talk about Brian Burke because another Ducks-related move happened this last little while. Ken Klee, a guy that they got in the Matthew Schneider trade, they waived. They brought back through re-entry waivers, and then Phoenix promptly claimed him. So now the Ducks are on the hook for half of Klee's salary, and Phoenix gets him for half price. So that's two guys. One guy they got for free and one guy they got for half price.
Wait, is frickin' Anaheim like Ross department store here? Like, I got it at Ross. I got Brizgalov and Klee for half price at Ross.
Yeah, it's like the discount rack.
It's a joke. He's like Austin Powers, lost his mojo, baby.
Yeah.
Brian Burke, what's going on over there? So you trade Schneider and you get Klee and then you waive Klee. So essentially for Klee's salary, now you've got Brett Hedekin. So you traded Schneider for Brett Hedekin, basically.
Right.
It all evens out. It's about the same money.
Mm-hmm. And now they got Steve Montador down there. I mean...
So you've got Montador instead of O'Donnell?
Right. So I think we need to start actually asking ourselves, is Brian Burke a little bit of... he's made a sort of a bevy of bad moves. I mean, maybe we should start thinking about, you know, the conventional wisdom was Brian Burke is this hockey man genius. He knows exactly what he's doing, and he's he can get exactly what he wants. And I mean, he put together the team. He made the Pronger trade that won the cup, and he should be commended for that. But the past couple of years, I you know, he's made a
he's had a cold streak for sure.
Yeah.
The Bertuzzi signing of a 3-year deal and then the buyout.
Two years, $4 million per, I think.
Oh yeah, two years. Because now they're on the hook for his salary for $1.3 million for the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. So basically the fact that Bertuzzi's on their cap means that Bobby Ryan has no spot on their team.
And Bobby Ryan is kicking ass in Iowa right now,
but he can't come up. He makes too much money.
Right.
So they're totally screwed.
So their best prospect
can't play on the team.
Is way too good for the AHL right now, and they can't bring him up. If that's not bad management, what is it?
It's bad management.
Yeah, exactly.
How about that Brendan Morrison signing? 1 point and a minus five. He's real good, isn't he? And they're paying him almost $3 mil.
Right, right.
Like a bunch of bonehead moves, and the Ducks seem to have kind of turned it around a little bit here. I think they're back.
Maybe he's building his resume for Toronto by making a bunch of bad moves. You know, they'll hire him right off the street.
Cole Fletcher will have no clue who he's hired.
Ducks are coming back. I mean, clearly the Ducks are still a good team despite sort of the downgrades they've made at defense. They beat Montreal in Montreal, which is
A great road trip. They did the Canada sweep. I think they've won four in a row.
And they beat Columbus in the last game. So I'm certainly not counting the Ducks out and saying that they're a bad team, but it seems like they've certainly made some ill-advised moves over the past couple of years.
This is going to come back to haunt them in the end because they've got no room to maneuver. Their defense is definitely suspect. You know, I like Brett Hedekin, but he's not Schneider.
Mm-hmm.
And O'Donnell for Montador isn't looking like a very sharp move right now either. So I think they're in a little bit of trouble down the road.
All right, I want to do a Wings preview and maybe a little bit of a Colorado preview in a second, but I want to talk about emails first. You can email us at questions@dudesonhockey.com. We'll read your email on the air. You can send us a question about just about anything related to hockey. It doesn't necessarily have to be about the Sharks. But and Ian actually sent us a nice note. He said that our last episode was, quote, above average, dude.
Oh, thank you.
Above average. Hey.
That's right. Hey.
Rock on.
But I've many comments there.
I have another email actually from Craig Collins, who is an emailer. He says, "Dear webmaster, I'm writing to inform you of an exciting business opportunity for your website. My company would like to pay you for helping to promote one of our clients' websites. Our mission is to be the leading provider for web promotion solutions online, and we are seeking reputable websites. Please contact us for further details on how you can profit from our offer. Best regards, Craig Collins." Well, thanks for the email, Craig. I appreciate your fandom with the San Jose Sharks. And, you know, I think you're right. I think the penalty kill has been a little bit suspect as of late. And, you know, I think your email really cuts to the core of that particular issue with the Sharks. And please never email us again, Craig.
That's right. We should assign Curtis Brown.
Yeah, get the hell out. But thanks for that. So,
you saying you don't want to advertise, dude?
We could advertise, but you know this guy doesn't need to send me spam. Get out, Craig.
One less listener.
Yeah, into the blacklist you go, meat. All right, so let's talk about the Wings. Wings are on Thursday. We have a little bit of a benefit with the scheduling gods here. The Wings are going to be on sort of the tail end of a Western road trip. They're actually playing tomorrow night in Anaheim. Is that right? Or the Kings tomorrow night?
They play tomorrow night. In Anaheim,
so they have to play the Ducks tomorrow night, where they could very well get beat up, and you know there could take some physical punishment, and then they have to play us the very next night up here in San Jose, while the Sharks are going to be, you know, going to OJ's and you know, you know, eating things, or in Ryan Clough's case, you know, having a couple Coors, and
ooh.
Oh, I know, it was a low blow. I'm sorry, but anyway, so it certainly seems to be to the Sharks' benefit. Is this? So let's talk about the Wings. Ever since they lost opening night to Toronto, they have not lost a game in regulation. They lost in overtime to Chicago, but other than that, they've won every game. So the Wings look just like the team that we expected them to be, which is namely dominant.
Good. Good. This is what we need to see.
Okay.
We need to see how we match up against the best team in the league. We're going to find out. No excuses. You know, here we go, head-to-head. The heavyweight battle, it's too bad. Probably no one will see it except for anybody on the West Coast.
Right.
But this is a huge, huge matchup that I think the Sharks are going to be definitely ready for. And I can't wait.
Yeah, I want to see how the styles match. I mean, clearly we did very well against a very good team in Pittsburgh that's doing very well. So, and we shut them down pretty much cold. So the Wings will have Franzen out. Is that right? I think Franzen's hurt.
Franzen's out.
So they may have a little bit of
sprained left MCL, and Chris Chelios is out with a prostate exam.
Yeah, he's out with
fractured right tibia.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Not enough calcium.
That's right. He needs to take those shakes that you see on TV.
That's right. Ensure.
Ensure. But so the Wings may have a little bit less secondary firepower than they might normally, and maybe that's something we can exploit, because it looks like we have two very good scoring lines right now with the Pavelski line and the Joe line, and you see Marlowe jumping all over the place, and clearly Pavelski's been one of the best players for the Sharks this season.
Do you think this is going to be a high-scoring game, or do you think it's going to be pretty tight?
Well, not to go back to Ryan Garner, but he did say that the Sharks would give up 9 goals combined to Pittsburgh and Detroit, so that means, according to his prediction, they're going to cough up 9 to the Wings on Thursday. I just don't see that happening. Actually, I think we're going to see more of the same. I think the Sharks have been very effective in playing this defensive style that has served them well the past two games, and I don't think they're going to want to get away from it with a team that has so much firepower themselves. Why would you want to go end-to-end with Datsyuk and Zetterberg, you know?
Right.
Didn't he
say he'd eat his hat, Mike?
I believe so.
I hope he likes
I hope it's like a 10-gallon hat.
Knit wool.
I hope it's like a huge hat.
Can he use A1?
He can use whatever meat tenderizers he wants to use.
It's hard to know what to... I'm expecting an awesome game from both teams. Mm-hmm. You know Detroit's looking forward to it too. I mean,
there's going to be some great atmosphere at the Tank. It's going to be awesome. I mean, everybody's looking forward to this game. You know, they always bring out Wings fans when you're there. There's going to be a lot of back and forth between fans in the stands, and the Wings always are a team that Sharks fans love to hate. You know, it's going to be a very high energy game. It's going to be an awesome game to watch. I'm so glad that we are going to be there.
That's right.
That is awesome. All right, so let's hit the shootout, which is a rundown of various stories around the NHL. So first of all, big item in the news this week, it's a Doug Waite hit on Brandon Sutter. Sutter was coming through the neutral zone with his head down. Waite stepped right up to him and laid his shoulder right on upside in Sutter's head, knocked him clean out. So a lot of hubbub, hits to the head and should be banned, outlawed, all this kind of thing. We got to protect our players. What do you think about the hit?
You're skating in the middle of the ice. You put your head down.
Exactly.
Doug Waite loves to hit people.
Right.
What are you doing?
I mean, that's like a huge target.
Yeah.
Welcome to the league, Rook. I mean, what else can you say?
I don't think it was intentional, and right. I think he meant to lay him out, but I don't think he meant to hit him in the head.
Right.
How can you control what another player does? You know, he's coming around. He's skating down the middle of the ice. He puts his head down. It's too late. By the time he put his head down, it was too late. Doug Waite was committed.
Oh, yeah, he was on a collision course. If he peeled off, he took himself right out of the play.
Yeah.
I think the league maybe needs to crack down a little bit more on players jumping to make the hit, which we see fairly often in a lot of games.
We saw it tonight. Malkin left his feet at the end of the game and totally boarded. I don't know who it was, but you know, of course, there's going
to
be no call there. But
it was so
that's
late in the game.
It's a no-no. But
I wish the league would crack down more on those hits. But if you're skating, you know, if you're not jumping up to hit somebody and you hit somebody clearly with your shoulder, not your elbow, not your forearm, I'm real sorry for that injury, but that's just part of the game, and you got to get used to it. People get injured, and it's a hard-hitting sport, and that kind of stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so next story, it's a prediction that we never could have called. Pavel Dimitra is actually hurt. Who would have thunk it? What do we predict? 50 games for this guy? Well, our prediction is already coming true. He's going to be out a month. So great.
He's been
pick.
Promptly dropped in the Dudes on Hockey Fantasy League.
That's right, with good reason. Who made that drop?
It looks like Clutterbuck Scores dropped him and picked up Bill Guerin. So
it's a good move, because Dimitra's, you know, he's just not a good fantasy player. You just gotta lose yourself to that guy. It's not worth it. All right, next funny issue is Manny Legacy tripped on a carpet when Sarah Palin dropped the ceremonial puck and Manny Legacy hurt his hip, and so he's out.
Oh, Mike, I could see Chris Mason from my house.
Oh, yeah, you betcha. Blues have a good power play so far. Oh, yeah.
I'm a big Eric Brewer fan.
Scott Gomez is from Alaska.
Brad Boys will be my Secretary of State.
My Secretary of Hockey. I'm creating a new cabinet position.
Your Sarah Palin sounds like Carol Channing.
It's the same person. It's just a younger Carol Channing.
Wow.
What can you say about that? Tripping on a carpet and hurting your hip, man. That's funny.
Pretty hilarious.
That's almost as funny as like crying when your coach gets fired.
Oops, Patrick Kane.
Sorry, buddy. Next story, which applies to the Sharks. Sharks playing Colorado on Sunday, and Peter Budaj having an absolute putrid start. Was the player second or first star NHL player of the week last week. So Budaj is hot.
I'm pissed.
So how dangerous is Colorado now?
I had Andrew Raycroft. I picked him up. I'm pissed. Yeah. I'm really upset about it.
Yeah, that serves you right for picking up Andrew Raycroft.
You know I like Colorado, that I think they're going to be a good team for the remainder of the season. I think Budaj is going to be hot and cold.
Let's hope they're cold on Sunday.
Yeah, let's hope so. I definitely think that they're a dangerous team.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
I picked them last, so I don't hope they suck.
Well, I think you're going to be wrong.
Nah. Anyway, so last story, Marian Gaborik hurt again. The Gaborik countdown continues. Wilder offering him up for a trade. This guy's going to make $9 million to play 50 games a year. What, you know, is this guy just like a Superman? Or, I mean, I don't really understand. I guess I'm having trouble understanding why this guy is held in such high regard.
I don't see it either. And, you know, if you can't get on the ice for a full season, you know, why are you worth the most money in the NHL? But, I mean, you know Cliff Fletcher is going to give it to him.
I think that does it for this week of News on Hockey. Thanks for listening. You can check us out, check out our blog at sharks.hockeyanalysis.com. We'll be back again next week. Make sure to watch the games and send us some emails, and we will talk to you then.
I'm throwing out a quick prediction, Mike.
All right.
I'm going to say Javi Bjorklund to the Avalanche.
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.